فين بين الشباب مرة 8 و 5 نبدأ ولا نتظرب شوي
محاضر مؤسس
فضل بسم الله Today's lecture is about the congenital problems related to neurosurgeons. So it is the common congenital neurosurgical diseases that patients present to neurosurgeon for treatment. To understand these problems, we need to talk about the development of the nervous system, of the embryology, the part of science that everybody doesn't digest it easily, the congenital malformation, and the important or the common anomalies present to neurosurgeons are the neural tube defect, the hydrocephalus. Then we'll talk about the some other anomalies like the arachnoid cyst, dandy Walker cyst, Chiari malformations, craniosynostosis, tuberous sclerosis, neurofibromatosis. Those are diseases present usually in early infancy or even antenatally, and they are often directed to the neurosurgeon that is having a lot of input in the management of these patients. So what can go wrong with the brain during the development? If anything goes wrong, it gives rise to an anomaly. Some events might happen antenatally, also can cause CNS anomalies. If the brain developed normally but has an abnormal function, it may give rise to a abnormal functions. In the process of formation, if there is any abnormality in the chromosomes or the DNAs in the early antenatal life, this also may lead to an anomaly. So neural tube defect and neuromigrational disorders are in the abnormal development. Cerebral palsy is a prenatal event like hypoxia or abnormal development of one of the blood vessels of the brain may lead to the cerebral palsy. Abnormal function like epilepsy, hydrocephalus also is considered an abnormal function. Presumably the brain has developed normally or has its constituents. Neurofibromatosis and tuberous sclerosis is stage Walker syndrome is also an abnormal manifestation. This is just a general outlook about what might happen in the CNS. So the development of the nervous system, as you know, the CNS is of neuroectodermal in origin. The ectoderm will form the nervous system and the outer skin. So the brain is formed from the same stem cell of
skin,
which forms the skin. And it is covered by the mesoderm and the endoderm. Okay? So if you look at the CNS, when it starts to form, it is in the form of a neural plate. And the neural plate invaginates to form the neural tube at the end. Passing through the process of a neural fold, it gives rise to a groove, then it forms the neural tube. So the neural tube is formed in the center of the body of the embryo, and it migrates rostrally to form the brain and caudally to form the spinal cord. So simply starts by a small neural plate, and this plate forced invaginate to form the tube, and the neural tube migrates rostrally to the brain or to form the brain, and caudally to give rise to the rest of the CNS. Then it becomes covered by the mesoderm. Mesoderm forms the bones, which are the skull and the spine, and the endoderm forms the rest of the body. So This is the human embryo where it forms the brain and the spinal cord. The brain is formed of three parts, the forebrain, midbrain, and the hindbrain. And it grows, it convolutes on each other, and it gives rise to the end, the last picture of the brain where there are two cerebral hemispheres, cerebellum and brainstem. Each part of the CNS contains a cavity, and these cavities contain CSFs. So the brain ventricles contain CSF. The central canal of the spinal cord contains CSF. CSF circulates also around the CNS, so around the brain and around the spinal cord. The commonest neurosurgical defect or congenital anomaly is the neural tube defect. I mean by commonest is the commonest in that part of the world. The incidence is a little bit higher than anywhere else. Maybe high in India, Southeast Asia, but it's still high in the Middle East and high in Saudi Arabia. Spina bifida occulta is one sort of neural tube defect. As I said, the CNS is formed and it is covered by the mesoderm or the bones. So the vertebral body in front of the spinal cord and the spinal arch or the lamina and spinous process is on the back. They form from side to side and they meet to form the spinous process. If they fail to form a roof over the spinal cord, this is spina bifida. So it's a bifida spine. You just imagine the spine has a spinous processes in, and in some parts there is no spinous process. And the two lamini did not reach or touch each other to fuse together. So there is a gap between both and there is a bifida spine there. Spina bifida occulta, where there is a spina bifida in people that they do not complain of. They have no symptoms. And it is also usually discovered incidentally. And the incidence is 5 to 10%, which is very high. If we x-ray all of us, at least 3 or 4 of us will have spina bifida, and we never complained of anything. Usually we don't treat it. So this is the pathophysiology, as I said, failure of fusion of the roof or bones around the CNS. But sometimes the CNS itself, when it is forming, it fails to fuse. Like in the top part, where when it migrates rostrally to form the brain, it fails to fuse and it gives rise to anencephaly. And so anencephaly, where there is no brain. Anencephaly means there is no brain. And this is incompatible with life, and babies, they die once they are delivered. Sometimes they die antenatally. The same might happen when the neural tube migrates caudally. It may fail to fuse and is not covered by mesoderm or endoderm. And therefore it is formed outside the body, just like an open tube. And we call it rachischiasis or myeloschiasis. Both forms are the most difficult, complex, dangerous forms, difficult to treat, and they may lead to a lot of complications. One of them is death. So if you look at these pictures, and this is the neural groove at the start of the formation of the CNS, and this is the neural tube. This is an example of an encephaly. There is no brain, just open skull, no brain at all. And here there is a spina bifida aperta or open spina bifida. These are some examples of an encephalocele, and this is a spina bifida with meningomyelocele. Myeloschiasis, as I said, is the dangerous part or the complex part of the spina bifida, where there is a neural plate just opened, not fused, not folded at all to form the neural tube, and is not covered by the bone. Look at the body of the vertebra. This is the lateral part, lateral mass of the vertebra. There is no lamina, there is no spinous process, there is no skin. So you find only neural placode, neural structures, just exposed to the skin. So this is the dangerous form of a neural tube defect. Simply people, they define it as a myelomeningocele. It is not a myelocele, it is not a meningocele, it is a little bit dangerous form. We call it myeloschiasis. This is the meningocele. So vertebral body, lateral mass of the body, there is no lamina, no spinous process, and the meninges or the dura herniates outside the body, so still covering the CNS, still covering the cord, and is covered by skin. It contains only CSF, and CSF is contained in meninges or dura, therefore we call it meningocele. If it contains the spinal cord, we call it meningomyelocele. So myelo is a Latin word for spinal cord. Myelocele means a spinal cord contains sac, like varicocele, hydrocele, it is the same nomenclature. And this is the example of the Maelus crisis or Rakes crisis. So these are the common forms of the neural tube defect. One is the spina bifida occulta, that the patient is asymptomatic. The spinal cord is in the spinal canal. The skin is normal. There is no herniation of the meninges or CSF contains sac. Therefore, it is this one is called meningocele. No herniation of the spinal cord, meningomyelocele. Or if the skin is not covering the neural placoid, called Maelus crisis. The causes are not known. There are some associated factors that may lead to the occurrence of the spina bifida. The commonest, which is known, is the folic acid deficiency. Usually it is genetic determinants leads to the mutation in the process of metabolism of folic acid, and this lead to low level of folic acid in the ladies. Therefore, they started treatment by folic acid for ladies who they would like to be pregnant. The problem is this occurs in the 28th day of life, 28th day of gestational life. And when do you think ladies know they are pregnant? When they miss a cycle. So married ladies, when they miss a cycle, they think they are pregnant, then they start to investigate. By the time the CNS is already formed, and if she has a spina bifida, it is already formed. And if you start folic acid, it is too late. So when do you have to start folic acid for this patient?
Planning
when she's planning or when she wants to be pregnant. Therefore, they put it in the flour, the tahin, in the States and Europe. Not all, excuse me, not all ladies, they have a folic acid deficiency or a problem in the metabolism of the folic acid, but it is a known common cause. Other causes like drugs exposure to radiation or chemicals, and malnutrition also is another cause. The diagnosis of spina bifida starts antenatally when the pregnant ladies go for ultrasonic examination, the routine sonar examination. So why they do sonar? To know the sex of the baby or to look for anomalies. So it's actually they look for the baby in general, like the length, the weight, the heart rate, the number of fetuses, and the associated anomalies. Spina bifida and meningomyelocele, like in this baby, is seen very well in an MRI scan. When the radiographer thinks that there is an anomaly that needs further investigation, they request MRI scan for the baby. So you can scan the baby in the uterus. You can request an MRI scan for the infant before his birth. And you can see the hydrocephalus in this child. Can you see the ventricles and the meningomyelocele in the cervical spine? So you can diagnose congenital anomalies of the babies while they are still antenatally. Some other invasive investigations, like the assessment of the alpha-fetoprotein level in the amniotic fluid. But this means you have to take a sample of amniotic fluid. You have to do amniocentesis. Assessment of the alpha-fetoprotein in the serum of the pregnant ladies. If you have a baby with a neural tube defect and leak of CSF into the amniotic fluid, may be absorbed through the maternal blood, and alpha-fetoprotein rises in the level in the serum of the mother. So if you check the alpha-fetoprotein in the serum and you find it high, it is likely to be an open neural tube defect. If you do an amniocentesis and check the alpha-fetoprotein and you find it high, this is an open neural tube defect. So these are the methods of diagnosis of the antenatal neural tube defect. The clinical manifestations depend on the seriousness of the condition and the level. So if it is a spina bifida occulta, you may not find any abnormalities or neurological abnormalities. If it is a meningocele, so the spinal cord is normal in its place, no other associated anomalies, the neurological function of the baby will be normal, but he will have a large sac in the back, has a CSF. The common site of meningocele, meningomyelocele, is in the lumbar area or lumbosacral area, but it might happen anywhere in the spine. So you may find it like in this example in the cervical spine or dorsal spine, but the common areas are in the lumbar and in the lumbosacral area. So if the baby has a myelocele where the spinal cord is formed outside the spinal canal, it will not function well. And the baby will lose the function of that part of the spinal cord. If it is low, like sacral, where the nerves supply the feet, so the child will have weakness of his feet, but he will be able to stand and walk with support or with some support to the feet. If the meningomyelocele is a little bit higher up in the lumbar area, let's say in L1-2, L1-2 supplies the flexors of the thigh, and also supply, and the lower part of the spinal cord supplies the rest of the feet, of the legs. So we'll have weakness of the feet, weakness of the knees, and weakness of the flexors of the thigh. So this child is unable to stand or walk. He will be wheelchair bound. So according to the level of the meningomyelocele, and as I said, if the spinal cord is formed outside its normal place, it will not function well, or it may not function at all. So part of the function of the spinal cord is motor function. The child will lose the motor function. Another part is the sensory function. The child also loses the sensory function of that part. And the last is the autonomic function. Autonomic function, I'm talking about what?
Incontinence.
The sphincter control. So the child will lose the sphincter control. And these are the clinical manifestations. Some other associated anomalies, like the Chiari malformation. We will talk about it in a minute. Another anomaly is hydrocephalus. So if you have a child born with a meningomyelocele, please look at the whole CNS. Don't diagnose it as only anomaly in the child. You have to look for hydrocephalus and look for Chiari malformation. Look for other congenital brain anomalies and look for the consequences of the myelocele or meningomyelocele. Look at the spinal deformity, the feet deformity, and the other sphincter anomalies. This is the Chiari malformation. Chiari malformation means a downward herniation of the cerebellar tonsils through the foramen magnum. Normally, cerebellum is in the cranial cavity. It is not in the spinal canal. And if part of the cerebellum, which is called the cerebellar tonsil, herniates into the spinal canal through the foramen magnum, this is called Arnold Chiari malformation or Chiari malformation. There are four types of Chiari malformation. Type 2 is the one associated with meningomyelocele. It is common as the meningomyelocele is common here in this place. So you find downward herniation of the cerebellar tonsils, and in addition you may see also peaking of the tectum, which is the top part of the midbrain, stretching of the brain stem, and crowding of the posterior fossa, encroachment of the CSF pathway on the posterior fossa, where is the fourth ventricle, the foramen of Magendie, the aqueduct of Sylvius, leads to hydrocephalus. And also in this child you may find agenesis of the corpus callosum. This is only part of the corpus callosum, the anterior part. The rest of the corpus callosum is not formed. So look for other congenital anomalies, look for Chiari malformation, look for hydrocephalus associated with the meningomyelocele. Another important point that you have to know on the management of these children, they may have latex allergy. Any baby with spina bifida, we treat him as having latex allergy, till proved otherwise. I mean by latex is the substance they use to form the gloves, or it's some form of rubber. So if the gloves contains latex and you are dealing with a child with a spina bifida, he easily can get latex allergy. And sometimes it is too dangerous, it may cause angioneuritic edema and may lead to death. So any child with a spina bifida, treat him as a latex allergy. How you do this? You just wear latex-free gloves. And usually it is color-coded. You find an abnormal gloves with colors like the blue one. It is latex-free. So when you are dealing with a child, going for theater, for an example, child having a VP shunt for hydrocephalus, and he's known to have a spina bifida. So we put a label, this is a spina bifida case, and he might have latex allergy. If he is proved to have a latex allergy, someone dealt with him wearing a glove containing latex and starts to develop rashes in the skin, so it is a latex allergy. Other anomalies might happen like seizures. These children, either they are malnourished or obese. Obese because of lack of movement, lack of exercises, or malnourished because of the repeated problems, repeated infection, repeated urinary tract problems, and therefore they are malnourished. They have a VP shunt, and they may develop VP shunt malfunction, and most of them, they might have a psychosocial problems. So spina bifida patients, those you see them on a wheelchair and they are handicapped, they need a lot of help. When you deal with them in a medical way, think about this. latex allergy, congenital other anomalies, nutritional abnormalities, VP shunt, and also psychodevelopmental pathways. Clinical manifestations, we have talked about it. This is an example of the myelosuppression. There is a very thin membrane containing CSF. This is not dura. This is not skin. And that part of the defect is the spinal cord itself, the neural plate, before it falls, before it closes to form neural tube. Can you imagine a neural plate is exposed to the surface, to the outside? Therefore, it is not functioning, and therefore, this child is paraplegic. Meningomyelocele, you will find covered by skin, even the thin skin, covered by meninges and contains the spinal cord. Meningocele only contains CSF. The treatment of this case is started antenatally, and usually we don't do a lot antenatally, except in some places in the world they have a therapeutic abortion, and therefore you find the incidence is very low. By the way, the incidence of spina bifida is 1 per 1,000 live birth. Here is 2 per 1,000 live birth. In Southeast Asia, 5 per 1,000 live birth. In Belgium and Scandinavia, 0.2 per 1,000 live birth. They have therapeutic abortion and babies are not born live to increase the incidence of the spina bifida. Treatment when they are born, the aim of treatment is to just cover the defect. Make sure it is very well covered, not exposed to the surface, and not going to rupture. It is one of the cases that we consider it a neurosurgical emergency if it is ruptured or impending rupture, or if it is open, like this case. So once it is ruptured, there is a CSF leak, or if it is going to rupture, they will leak a CSF, or like this case, it is exposed to the surface. So why we treat it in emergency basis? Why we have to treat it, or cover it, or repair it? If it leaks CSF, what might happen? CSF is coming out of the... If you leave this without treatment, what might happen? If you... infection, if you leave this without treatment, it is a very, very good medium for bacteria and it will get infected. So if CSF is leaking, it is a very high risk of infection. And infection here means... meningitis or meningoencephalitis, which is dangerous, may kill. Therefore, we treat it on emergency basis if it is ruptured or open or exposed or impending rupture. I mean by emergency, if the child is just born, we prepare him for surgery and we treat him in the first few hours after delivery. Otherwise, if it is nicely covered, we don't treat on emergency basis and we prepare the baby for surgery whenever it is available or valid. So this is the neural tube defect, the first common congenital anomaly, with its associations and other anomalies. Any question before we shift to other anomaly? Yes. No. It is just a tiny defect, very well covered by muscles, fats, skin, membranes, ligaments. Unless you put just a needle inside it, in the lumbar puncture. Any other questions?
Yes. Can it be in the whole vertebral column? Or
just... Usually it affects one or two levels. If it is severe, it affects the whole sacrum and it leads to sacral agenesis. So you find the whole sacrum is not formed.
You said the myelosuppression is very dangerous. Does it more dangerous than encephaly?
And encephaly, they die. Myelosuppression, they don't die. Any other questions? Yeah. So the second anomaly is an encephalocele, which is similar to the meningocele. The difference is it occurs in the skull. So there is a defect in the skull, but it is not a spina bifida. And this defect allows the CSF contained in meninges to form outside. And if it contains CSF only, it is a meningoencephalocele, or meningocele in the skull, or we call it occipital meningocele. If it contains a brain, we call it encephalocele. Like this child is born with a large sac in the back of his head, so it is not a spina bifida, it is not in the spine, and if you do transillumination test, you find it contains fluid. If you do ultrasound, you find no brain inside. If you do MRI scan, you find no brain inside. There are some structures there in this part of the skin, which could be related to the neural structures or neural placode or part of the brain. However, he has a well-formed brain, but he still has the all risk factors of developing the other congenital neuro anomalies like Chiari malformation, Akerman, hydrocephalus, Caesars, and the other abnormalities in the formation of the brain itself. This child is born, I cannot say normally, but born okay till that age. I think he was 14 days old. He was brought by a nurse, or accepted to be seen in the clinic, brought by a nurse to the clinic to be seen. These cases you have to deal with the family first before dealing with the child. So we have to explain everything to them before you treat. Therefore, we ask it for the parents. Take your baby home, take your baby back to the hostel and bring him next week with the family. However, he came next week, next day with the ruptured encephalocele. So now it is an emergency. Look at the skin, just ruptured, CSF came out. It is dangerous and he may die of infection if he develops infection. Therefore, we have to take him straight away to theater. If part of the brain is formed outside the brain, it is not functioning, and therefore we excise it if it is abnormal, or we just cover it by skin and bone. The clinical manifestations of these cases depend on the part of the brain formed outside or formed inside the sac. If the cerebellum, it may usually lead to an abnormal in the balance and the unsteady. However, they develop only hydrocephalus and they need a VP shunt. So this is another anomaly of the neural tube defect, but in the skull, called an encephalocele or meningoencephalocele. The other common congenital anomaly is the hydrocephalus. Simply, the definition of hydrocephalus, it comes from its name. Hydro means water, cephalus means head or brain. So hydrocephalus means water in the brain. So when you define it in a scientific way, you will say the definition of hydrocephalus is accumulation of CSF within the cerebral ventricles, but you have to add associated with increased intracranial pressure. So an abnormal intracranial pressure is the definition of hydrocephalus. Not only water in the skull or in the brain, we have all CSF in our brains. But if it is not associated with increase or change in the intracranial pressure, it is not a hydrocephalus. The incidence of hydrocephalus is also 1 per 1,000 live birth. So you have one every 1,000 baby born have having hydrocephalus. CSF starts to form once the CNS is formed, as I said, in the 28 days starts to form from the neural plate, and it forms the brain. And the brain convoluted on each its parts to form the cerebral parts and the ventricles. The ventricles contain choroid plexus, and choroid plexus actively secretes CSF. So CSF is formed by an active secretion from the choroid plexus. So it is continuously formed, continuously secreted. And the rate of production of CSF from the choroid plexus in the ventricles is 0.3 to 0.4 mL per minute. For you and me, we form about 500 mils every day, and garurit maya every day. But the amount of CSF in our CNS is 150 of cc's. So the 350 are absorbed. If there is a problem in the circulation of the CSF, or a problem in the absorption of the CSF, what will happen? It will accumulate and it will form the hydrocephalus. 70% is formed by the choroid plexus and 30% is formed from the other parts of the CNS. This is the cast of the ventricles without brain. You can see the both lateral ventricles which are communicating together through the foramen of Monroe towards the third ventricle. And the third ventricle leads to the fourth ventricle through the aqueduct of Salvius to the fourth ventricle. So this is the fourth ventricle. This is the aqueduct of Salvius. This is the lateral ventricle, which is a C-shape. It has a frontal lobe, it has a body, atrium, occipital horn, frontal horn, body, atrium, occipital horn, and temporal horn. And the foramen of Monroe allows CSF to pass from the lateral ventricle into the third ventricle. This is the third ventricle. And from the third ventricle through the aqueduct into the fourth ventricle. And from the fourth ventricle to the around the brain at the spinal cord through the midline foramen of Magendie and the lateral foramina of Lushka. So this is the pathway of CSF within the cerebral ventricles. We talked about its formation and circulation. Now it's absorption. It is absorbed in the dural venous sinuses through the arachnoid granulation. So it circulates around the brain. It is not absorbed in the ventricles. It is formed in the ventricles and circulates to reach outside the brain to keep the brain healthy. You just imagine your brain without CSF around it. It will not be healthy. It will be dry. And it will irritate or gets irritated by the covering meninges. Therefore, it is surrounded by a CSF. It works like a cushion, so it absorbs any movement or shaking or trauma, and also it is nutrient to the surface of the brain. It is getting absorbed through the arachnoid granulation in the dural sinuses into the bloodstream. So CSF is formed from the blood through the choroid plexus and absorbed into the blood through the arachnoid villi or arachnoid granulation through the dural sinuses. This is a coronal view of the brain, showing the brain, the lateral ventricles, the foramen of Monroe, the third ventricle, aqueduct of Sylvius, fourth ventricle, midline foramen of Magendie, lateral foramina of Lushka, and CSF around the cerebellum, CSF around the brain, and also the spinal cord contains central canal, contains CSF, and there is a CSF around the brain as well. This is the dural sinuses where the CSF is absorbed through the superior sagittal sinus. So if you talk about hydrocephalus, what do you think causes hydrocephalus? Obstruction in the pathway. Obstruction could be within the ventricles or outside the ventricles. Within the ventricles, like in the aqueduct, if it is getting stenosed or narrow or blocked, the commonest cause of congenital hydrocephalus, congenital aqueduct stenosis. CSF will accumulate in the lateral ventricles and in the third ventricle. What about the fourth? It will not reach through the aqueduct. So fourth ventricle will be large, small, or normal?
Large.
Why large?
علشان تقدر عشان يجي أكثر CSF لأنه ما يجيها.
ما يجيها CSF. So why it is large? Why small? But it contains choroid plexus. So there is an active secretion of CSF within the fourth ventricle, therefore you find it normal. It is not affected by the aqueduct. No CSF is reaching it from the other ventricles, but it has his own CSF. So what will happen to the third ventricle?
Dilate.
And lateral ventricles? They will dilate. Other causes of obstruction, tumors inside the ventricles, tumors outside the ventricles, hemorrhage outside the ventricle may press or compress the pathway of the CSF. Tumor commonly in the fourth ventricle, like in children, in medulloblastoma, ependymoma, astrocytoma, or gliomas, it will block the CSF within the fourth ventricle, lead to dilatation of the third ventricle, lateral ventricle. What will happen to the aqueduct? If you have a tumor in the fourth ventricle, blocking the CSF pathway, the aqueduct also will dilate. So CSF pathway might get blocked anywhere, and if it gets blocked, it will lead to dilatation of the CSF space proximal to the obstruction, and the distal part will be or might be normal. Other causes of hydrocephalus, as we mentioned, the pathway, the pathophysiology of CSF, like in its formation. If you have something stimulates more CSF formation, like in the choroid plexus, papilloma, it will lead to overproduction of CSF. So normally you have a linear relationship between the formation and absorption. Therefore the volume is stable. Exactly. If you have overproduction, so the rate of absorption is less than the rate of formation, this will lead also to accumulation and hydrocephalus. What will happen to the ventricles?
Dilate.
Compress.
Dilate. Which ventricles are dilated, which are not?
All
ventricles will be dilated. So lateral ventricles, third ventricle, and fourth ventricle will be dilated. You just imagine a choroid plexus papilloma in the fourth ventricle. So what type of hydrocephalus it will cause?
Sorry?
What type of hydrocephalus? احنا كلمنا عن two types دلوقتي. عن واحد كل الventricles dilated, واحد تاني في شوية ventricles dilated and some are not. واحد there is communication between the ventricles and another one there is no communication between all ventricles. So if you have a tumor in the fourth ventricle, again, if there is a tumor in the fourth ventricle, it will lead to obstructive type of hydrocephalus. choroid plexus papilloma in the fourth ventricle also causes obstruction of the C-step pathway. We lead to obstructive hydrocephalus. Another cause of hydrocephalus, if you have a problem in the absorption, if the CSF is not good, absorb it very well. If the CSF cannot reach the dural sinuses, on the surface of the brain there are a lot of adhesions. So if there is adhesions on the surface of the brain, the CSF will not find its way easy to reach to the dural sinuses. Adhesions might caused by adhesions on the brain caused by trauma, hemorrhage, infection. So these are the three common causes of adhesions around the brain. Tumor might cause if it reaches to a late stage of carcinomatous meningitis. But trauma, hemorrhage, and infection, post-traumatic, post-hemorrhagic, post-infection, causes hydrocephalus. So CSF will not find its place or its way to reach to the absorptive areas. So what will happen to the ventricles?
Dilate.
Which ventricles will dilate?
All of them.
All. And the communication between the ventricles is there, therefore we call it communicating hydrocephalus. The other cause or the last cause of hydrocephalus is CSF can reach to the dural sinuses, but it is not going into the sinuses. Why it is not going into the sinuses? There is obstruction in the sinuses. What causes obstruction in the venous sinuses?
Thrombosis.
So dural sinus thrombosis is another cause of hydrocephalus. What type of hydrocephalus then?
It's communicating
type of hydrocephalus. Clinical manifestations of hydrocephalus depends on the timing of diagnosis, depends on the age of the child or the infant or the antenatal life or period of diagnosis. So when you are asked about the clinical manifestations, and the question is just vague, what are the clinical manifestations of hydrocephalus, you choose an age, then talk about it. So if I ask you what are the clinical manifestations of hydrocephalus in an adult, increased intracranial pressure, so he will have all the manifestations of increased intracranial pressure. In a child, after closure of the sutures, similar to the other, all manifestations of increased intracranial pressure. But if the if you are asked about the clinical manifestations of hydrocephalus in a gravid uterus or a baby antenatally, what is the clinical manifestations? The mother will come to complain of enlarged head. The antenatal. Antenatal.
Antenatal.
What are the clinical manifestations? You are asking the question. What are the clinical manifestations? You have to remember this word very well. مش بس في النيورو. كل حاجة. زي مثلا, what are the clinical manifestations of fibroid uterus? لازم تقول نمرة واحد asymptomatic. Usually there are no symptoms. يعني many diseases they present with no symptoms. This is one of them. The mother is pregnant and she's happy and she goes for antenatal ultrasound assessment, and when they do the ultrasound they find the ventricles large. So there is no symptoms at all. You don't find the mother complaining of a baby with a large head. It is diagnosed by just ultrasound. So there is no manifestation. Sometimes they have an associated manifestations like polyhydramnios, oligohydramnios, a large abdomen, floating baby, or whatever. But there is no precise clinical manifestations of antenatal hydrocephalus. It's only diagnosed by investigation like ultrasound or an MRI scan. When the child is born and the skull is still soft, the bones did not fuse together yet, what will happen to the head when the CSF is accumulating? The head will increase in size. The fontanelle will be wide, widely open, full, and tense. Scalp veins will be dilated, and sunset appearance of the eyes. The baby will not be able to look upwards. Failure of upward gaze. This is known as a perinode syndrome, failure of upward gaze. It is a manifestation of third ventricular dilatation. When there is hydrocephalus and the third ventricle is dilated, the posterior part of the third ventricle is closely related to the tectum of the brain stem, the superior part of the midbrain, the top part of the midbrain. This top part of the midbrain contains superior colliculus. Superior colliculus has the nuclei of the cranial nerves of the eye, third cranial nerve and fourth cranial nerve. Third cranial nerve has all the functions of the eye except looking laterally and downward. So if the patient has a pressure on the superior colliculus of the brainstem, or pressure on the tectum of the brainstem, the superior colliculus will not function well. Third cranial nerve nuclei will not function well. Therefore, the baby will be unable to look upwards. Parinode syndrome, failure of upward gaze. The child cannot look upward well. You will find the eyes looking downward. You can see a white rim of sclera above the pupil. Very common exam question, very common manifestation or clinical sign that you should know. Another manifestations like McEwen's crackpot sign, this is a very old manifestation. Actually, in the past, they used to diagnose hydrocephalus by tapping on the skull. If the hydrocephalus is increasing in size, what will happen to the head? Increase in size of the head. Suppose you don't treat, what will happen to the head?
Brain will be compressed.
It will increase in size. Suppose you don't treat, what will happen? The child is alive. It will increase in size. This is what happens. They die of complications. I have never seen a burst brain, actually, or burst ventricle, but it continues to increase in size. It may reach to 110 centimeter head circumference if you don't treat. They die of complication. The clinical manifestations of hydrocephalus after closure of the sutures or fusion of the sutures, like after 1 year of age, after infancy, they will have the similar manifestations of increased intracranial pressure. There is slight increase in the size of the head. Sutures are not very well fused, and if you look at the x-ray, you will find the sutures just diastatic, slightly open, abnormally open. And they will have the other manifestations of increased pressure. The problem is they do not complain. So you have to look for the manifestations. Like, you'll find them lethargic, very restless or irritable, failure to thrive. They have repeated nausea, vomiting, and they may have periods of altered loss of consciousness or altered level of consciousness. They may have changes in the disc if you do fundoscopy, and they will have also a stretching of the legs, stiffness of the legs, brisk reflexes. Later on, they may develop bradycardia, hypertension, coning, and they may die. Treatment of the hydrocephalus depends on the cause, depends on the type of the hydrocephalus. Simply, if you have obstructive hydrocephalus by a tumor, how you treat hydrocephalus?
Shunt.
Take the tumor out, and this will treat hydrocephalus. If you have an obstructive cause that you can take it out or treat it, hydrocephalus will be treated. If you have a communicating type of hydrocephalus, so you have to find a way for the CSF to drain somewhere in the body cavities that can absorb the CSF, like the shunt. The standard treatment of obstructive hydrocephalus is endoscopic third ventriculostomy. We use the endoscope or the telescope, we put it in the ventricles, and we come to the floor of the third ventricle, and we make a hole in the floor of the third ventricle to bypass the obstruction. If you have an obstruction in the aqueduct or in the fourth ventricle, third ventricle will dilate, lateral ventricles dilate, you can put the endoscope and make a hole in the floor of the third ventricle to allow CSF to pass around the brain to reach to the arachnoid villi to be absorbed. The other causes of, the other management options of hydrocephalus is the shunt. Means to just drain the CSF by a CSF diversion procedure from the brain into one of the body cavities, like the peritoneal cavity, called the ventriculoperitoneal shunt. If you put it in the pleural cavity, called ventriculopleural shunt. In the venous system or in the heart, ventriculoatrial shunt or ventriculovenous shunt. You can put the shunt directly into the superior sagittal sinus. We call it ventriculosinus shunt. It is a shunt under trial, has a high risk of obstruction or complication. When the shunt is in the sinus, it may stimulate the dural sinus thrombosis. These are the types of shunts. You may hear about ventriculogallbladder shunt. I've never seen it. Ventriculoureteric shunt. So these are types of obstruction shunts that we don't use anymore. For endoscopic third ventriculostomy, we just put the telescope inside the ventricle, then we pass it through the foramen of Monroe to the third ventricle. This is a case of an endoscopic third ventriculostomy that got obstructed. And we just put the scope to see why it got obstructed. We found that the hole we made has been fused already, has been completely closed. So we go to the floor of the third ventricle, we use the special instruments, and we just make a hole in the third ventricle floor. So this is a case of redo endoscopic third ventriculostomy. This is the foramen of Monroe. The big round one you can see is the foramen of Monroe. So the telescope passed through the lateral ventricle, through the foramen of Monroe, into the third ventricle. Look at the floor of the third ventricle. Make a hole, then dilate this hole with the Fogarty catheter to make sure the hole will remain dilated. It will not close again. And after you make sure that the hole is dilated enough, you can put the tip of the scope and look through the hole to make sure that you have seen the structures of the posterior fossa like that. But in this case, we found another membrane, which is known as Lelekest membrane, common membrane, you find it. If you don't open it well, it will close again. And this probably was the reason of re-obstruction in this case, or obstruction and the need for redo operation. Therefore, we need to put another catheter into the other membrane, try to dilate it, try to open it. If you are satisfied with the opening, so you have to open both membranes. You have to create a good hole to make sure that you are creating a CSF corridor to pass around the brain. And even the membrane inside, I was not very satisfied to find it. Therefore, I have to take pieces of that membrane to make sure that the hole is nicely opened. This is an example of a ventriculoperitoneal shunt where you can put the shunt between the ventricles and pass it under the skin to the peritoneal cavity. Usually there is a valve between the two ends, the ventricular catheter and the distal catheter, to just regulate the CSF pathway. Otherwise, if you put a tube catheter, like when they started in 1930s or 40s, they put an esogastric tube between the brain and the ventricular cavity. So when the child is upright or sitting, the CSF is drained into the peritoneal cavity and he collapses. Therefore, they put a valve to regulate the amount of CSF and the volume of CSF passing through the brain into the peritoneal cavity. You have several types of valves. You have a pressure-regulated valves. You have a low pressure, medium pressure, high pressure. Like if you are putting a valve in a preterm. Preterm baby, 500 or 600 grams, having a very, very soft skull. The pressure is very low, not high, but it is high enough for him to dilate the skull. If you put a valve, exactly, if you put a valve that will not allow this pressure to open it, it will not work. Therefore, you have to put a low pressure valve to allow CSF to pass through it. Nowadays, there are valves that you can regulate it from outside or control it from outside by a magnet or by a programmer. We call it a programmable valve or adjustable valve. We put the valve for the baby and we adjust according to the CSF pathway or CSF flow by X-rays or CT scan. So you do a CT scan, you look if the ventricles are still dilated or if the child is still symptomatic, you can reduce the pressure, allow more CSF to pass. Or if you do a scan and you find the brain collapsed, there is a CSF outside the brain, you increase the pressure, allow less CSF to pass. We call it programmable valves. I'm sure in the future, in your days, you will have valves that you can control through the internet. You can put a chip, you can control it by the Bluetooth or the iPhone. The patient calls you and you can control it from your hand. I'm sure about that. There is nothing in the market, but this will be in your days. So this is the hydrocephalus. Any question for the hydrocephalus? One more important point. If you put a shunt, what might happen to the shunt in the future? So the shunt is at a risk of having complications like infection or obstruction. And the clinical manifestations of shunt obstruction is similar to clinical manifestations of hydrocephalus. So if the patient has a shunt which is not working, as if he has no shunts, he will have the same manifestations of hydrocephalus. Treatment of shunt obstruction is by revision, replacement, removal, endoscopic third ventriculostomy. So treat it as a fresh hydrocephalus having shunt which is not working. Take it out, put a new one, revise it, look at the reason of obstruction and revise it, or do an endoscopic third ventriculostomy and remove the shunt. The other common complication of shunt is infection. If you have a hardware in the patient, which is at a very high risk of coronization and infection, and if it gets the infection, means you tapped the valve, you sent CSF for analysis, and you found it infected in a very ill child. What do?
Remove.
You have to remove it to treat infection. But the child is hydrocephalus. What to do? If you replace it, the CSF is infected. The valve will get infected. If it is obstructed hydrocephalus and you do lumbar puncture, you will die of coning. endoscopic third ventriculostomy is an option. You can do endoscopic third ventriculostomy if the CSF is clear enough to do it. What else? What if you put a catheter to drain CSF to outside till the CSF gets cleared of infection? So you have the catheter, you can get a specimen of CSF for analysis till it gets it cleared. You have a catheter to treat hydrocephalus till CSF is cleared, then you can put a shunt. You have a catheter, you can give antibiotics through this catheter.
It will not collapse when you remove CSF.
It will collapse if you remove the whole CSF, but it is continuously formed in a rate of 0.3 to 0.4 ml every minute. 500 ml will be formed every day. So you should not drain 500 every day. We drain normally in adults 5 to 10 ml per hour, in children 2 to 5 ml per hour. So make sure that you are keeping CSF in the brain. Halasal obstruction, infection, these are the common complications and these are the treatments. These are the two most common congenital anomalies. نكمل بس ناخد فكرة كده وبعدين لو في وقت ناخد أسئلة. Other anomalies, Chiari malformation, كلمنا عليها. Herniation of the cerebellar tonsils through the foramen magnum. If it is associated with meningocele or meningomyocele, it is called Chiari 2. If it is not associated, it is called Chiari 1. This is Chiari 2. This is the child with stretching of the brain stem, peaking of the tectum, agenesis of the corpus callosum. It is Chiari 2. He has meningocele. This is not a congenital anomaly. Chiari malformation with no other congenital anomalies, therefore it is Chiari 1. Chiari 1 is usually diagnosed in adulthood or in adolescence. This is a normal brain. Clinical manifestation depends on the pressure of the chiari or of the tonsils on the brain stem and the cervical spinal cord. Another anomaly, Dandy Walker cyst.
Vermis, not vermis cyst.
It is a large cyst in the posterior fossa associated with agenesis of the cerebellum. Vermis is part of the cerebellum, so agenesis of the cerebellar vermis. You can see here the fourth ventricle is open, large cyst in the posterior fossa. Cerebellum is very hypoplastic. There is no cerebellar vermis. Can you imagine this part of the posterior fossa? And this is usually associated with hydrocephalus. And when you treat it, hydrocephalus is treated. It is called the Dandy Walker cyst. Another anomaly is an arachnoid cyst, which is the CSF contains a cavity in the brain lined by arachnoid membrane. And if it remains in that part of the brain, and if it increases in size, it will press on the adjacent brain, like this one. It has some small minimal effect on the brain. This one is large, actually, a large arachnoid cyst. If it is small, incidentally discovered, asymptomatic, no associated clinical problems, we don't treat. We treat it conservatively. Incidentally discovered, we treat it conservatively. If it is large, creating a mass effect, pressing on the adjacent brain, we have to treat it. So what are the options of treatment of a CSF contains cavity in the brain? Drain. How we treat it?
Drain.
Drain it. If you drain it, it will recollect again.
Drugs?
No drugs.
Shunt.
Shunt. So another option of treatment is to shunt it. We call it cystoperitoneal shunt. You put the catheter in the cyst. You can also use the scope to create a hole between the shunt and the CSF cavities, like the cisterns in the base of the skull or in the ventricle, if it is near the ventricles. Just make a hole between it and between the ventricles using the scope. Another congenital anomaly is craniosynostosis. We talked about skull bones fused together. And if they fuse prematurely, like in this child, who has the sagittal suture fused prematurely, and this will not allow the brain to grow from side to side. It will grow only anteroposterior. We call it a boat-shaped skull or scaphocephaly. And this is the shape of the head. This is another suture did not remain open or fused prematurely. It's a one-side coronal synostosis. Unilateral coronal synostosis. And this is the suture which is in the forehead. We call it metopic suture. If it is fused, we call it metopic synostosis or trigonocephaly. This is a child with the Cruzon syndrome, pan synostosis. All sutures are closed. Increased intracranial pressure, papilledema, optic atrophy. So you have to open the skull. This is a Pfeiffer syndrome, another cranial synostosis. Another anomaly is tuberous sclerosis. This is of neurosurgical interest and in neurofibromatosis. Just to know, there is tuberous sclerosis and in neurofibromatosis. Thank you. Okay. Hey, so, hey, sir.
الشنت دكتور الجي بي شنت كل كم تغيرونها علشان
ما بنغيرها الا اذا حصل لها
مشكله الجروث اوف ذا بيبي
يا نورمالي وي ليف انف لينث اوف ذا كاتيتر ان ذا بينال كافيتي اف ذا بيكم تول انف تو بول ذا كاتيتر اوتسايد وي تشينج ات ات ايج اوف 12 اور 15 بس نورمالي وي دونت ناخذ كوبي من ال